Okay, Ed Seidel, as you know, as most of you know anyway, isn't going to be here at least this week, and quite possibly not for the meeting because his wife is ill. And so I wanted to say a couple of things. I might have said some of these things anyway if Ed had been here. But I wanted to say a couple of things about goals. Short term, I put it up here. Short term goals for the binary black hole problem. I feel. Yes, I'm going to cover. But I'll cover it down to the next section because I don't want you to read my next section yet. This isn't a lecture. You don't have to take notes. But I wanted to talk about this because this is a fantastic opportunity. The fact that so many people have wanted to come here and talk about this problem illustrates how important we all think it is. I wanted to put it into context of what's happening on the gravitational wave project, and then say what the part that's covered up is to try to go into what I think maybe are key issues that I want to encourage people to focus on and to get some progress by the end of this meeting that we can see. The first point is this background that we all know about that LIGO, GEO, Virgo are under construction. Within 18 months or possibly 2 years, there'll be data of good quality coming out of these detectors. The other thing that some of you may not know is that there's increasing feeling among the astrophysicists that the most likely first source, the most likely first thing to be detected by these detectors could be a binary coalescence of two black holes. And the reason is that there have been calculations in the last year that suggest that the binary black hole population is much larger, larger by a factor of 10 or more than people had estimated before. And the extra increase in population comes from globular clusters, from core collapse globular clusters, in which binary interactions by black holes that were not formed in binary systems originally together, but that form binary pairs by three body collisions within these very dense cores, that these black hole binaries are formed and then ejected from the globular clusters, which are very weakly bound in most cases. And then they go flying off into space, and they're formed with parameters that allow them to decay, the orbit to decay, in less than Hubble time. And if those calculations are right, then the event rate for the first detectors could be such that within a year there could be an event seen by LIGO in the first level of sensitivity. So that really what we're talking about here at this meeting is something that may come along very soon in the physics of the universe that we're observing with these detectors. Now, as we've said many times, it's very important for these detector search algorithms to have information from numerical calculations. And I want to clarify that too. I want to say something about what kinds of things are the signal analysis people are really looking for. We had a workshop in Gholm a couple of months ago in which we invited people from Virgo and people from LIGO to join the GEO people in Gholm and talk about detection of unexpected signals or poorly modeled signals, precisely the situation we expect to be in for binary black holes. And at the end of that, we got some of the numerical people together and we had an afternoon discussing how you would put together all the information you might have about binary black hole coalescence in such a way as to improve or at least maximize your chances of detecting an event with the information we expect to have, let's say, within the next couple of years. And where are the critical contributions to that chain of argument that have to come from binary black hole modeling through large-scale numerical calculations? And let me just sketch a little bit about what the consensus view that I understand it that came out of that meeting, which is that We have very good post-Newtonian information about the in spiral. We also know at the end we expect the normal mode, the quasi-normal mode ringing. So we have the beginning and the end of the waveform. As Larry pointed out earlier in the meeting, even the final coalescence phase, because it's happening within that 3M barrier, reflecting barrier around a black hole, even that is probably going to produce radiation that looks more or less like quasi-normal ringing. The part that's been most worrying to people is what Kip has called the intermediate region, which is the last orbital phase when the post-Newtonian approximation is breaking down and no longer reliable before the things begin to plunge together and reach their last stable orbit and begin to plunge. I'm more optimistic about being able to model that, not exactly, but with the potential of getting information from that orbital phase analytically. I think we all understand that orbital phase where you're integrating the last, let's say, 10 orbits is a horrendous problem numerically. It's not going to be done in the next couple of years numerically because we don't have the techniques to do it. We don't have the computer time. We don't have the stability and so on. But there has been work by Thibault and by Satya Prakash on extending the waveforms that are generated by the post-Newtonian approximations closer to into this intermediate region through the use of Padé approximants. Now, those things seem to work quite well when you compare them with point particle in spiral in the intermediate region. Is at least a chance that they work well for equal mass case or relatively equal mass case. And what that will do for you, if this way of extrapolating the post-Newtonian information does work well enough, what that will do is it will allow us to construct orbits or construct waveforms that give us essentially the orbital information as these things come together. But we don't know where, and it won't come out of the Padé approximation, where to stop. We don't know where the orbital motion stops and the plunge begins. So I think that's the key place where absolutely we can say there's no information that apart from what will come out of black hole, binary black hole modeling, is where does the plunge begin? How far in do these stars go? Where does the plunge begin? And then what does the plunge look like as they come together and then they merge? And again, I think we've had lots of discussion around here about pathological cases and so on, but I think we should expect that really, when they do merge, it's a fairly spherical event. They're going to be in grazing instance. They're coming in some orbital way. We're not talking about highly pathological extreme situations, unless maybe something happens with the spins. But again, in the physics of these systems that are predicted here, the spins are probably only moderate. These are black holes that were formed probably in individual stellar explosions, probably didn't accrete very much material. They formed binary systems only after they were formed. So they're probably not strongly spinning black holes. So I think in terms of trying to get information about the first systems, we're not dealing with extremely pathological relativistic systems. We're dealing with a fairly gentle coalescence, fairly spherical, but we want to know where does that start? Where does that plunge start? And so it would seem to me that the crucial information that we should be asking for from here is the crucial numerical goal is can we get programs to run long enough so that we can separate the initial black holes further and further until they come to a point where if we give them initial conditions that Thibault may be able to provide for the orbit, we can see that they actually are orbiting rather than plunging. And that then we know where we begin. With the Padé, you can determine the last stable orbit? Okay. Well, that would be very interesting if we can do that. Yeah. Okay. Well, I think it's an. I don't believe we have an answer to that. But that we have confidence in. It. anyway, I think regardless of that, this statement is I would still stand by, is that the part that we as missing from a chain that we can put together now with some confidence is this bit of where does the plunge begin and what does the plunge radiation look like? Well, this is short-term. This is short-term goals, Abe. This is just for the next couple of years. But clearly, what we're aiming at in the long run is a much more complete solution of the problem. Well, one thing we don't know is how long does the plunge take. So, if I'm building a model for the signal, I have, even if I want to ignore the radiation from the plunge, I have an unknown time gap between where that's a parameter in my model, between where the inspire radiation ends and the quasi-normal ringing begins. And if I have a parameter that I have to adjust freely, that reduces greatly the significance and the signal noise that I can get in a detection. So I'd even like the information, how long does the plunge take? I think that's, we're not looking at in the beginning for a complete description. We're looking for a kind of heuristic. We're looking for particular key numbers that would help us to build models. So I want to, from my point of view, and I think from the point of view certainly of a lot of people in this room, the urgency in this problem right now is because of the comparison with the experiment. And I want to say something about there's a curious coincidence. This field began, let's say, I mean, Larry gave us the history of the field, but let's trace it from Larry's own work on the binary black hole problem. We're talking about early 70s, late 60s, early 70s. Now, that's roughly the same time as the people began building interferometers for gravitational wave detection. When the people began to realize that certain groups realized that bar detectors were not going to be the way forward, and they switched to interferometers at around the same time. So we've had these two efforts in parallel, moving forward in time. Both of them really difficult, both of them challenging, both of them limited by technology. The reason LIGO will work now is because there are bits of technology that were created in totally other areas of science that LIGO can use that were not available in the 1970s. And the same thing is true of our area. The reason we can attempt to solve black holes now is because we have computers that we didn't have before.
Yeah.
I did say, I think perhaps before you got here, that the astrophysics modeling that leads to a suggestion of a high event rate for binary black holes is the production mechanism. These things are produced in globular clusters by three-body capture. Now, those black holes are probably not strongly spinning because they were probably never accreting. They were probably formed in an individual stellar collapse, not in a binary system in which they subsequently accreted. So I think But I'm only talking about a short term now. I'm not saying what are the goals for the field, but I think it's important to focus on trying to get answers for at least moderate spin black holes plunging together in the first step.
Totally agree with that, yeah.
And I think the larger spins are going to be harder. It might be a step, and that's why I've written this third thing here. is I think we need phenomenology. But I wanted to come back to something about this comparison between the two cultures, the experimenters and the theoreticians, the modelers. We've gone along for a long time in parallel. As somebody who travels between these two groups, there's a big difference in culture right now between the experimenters and our group. And that's basically a difference in organization. The LIGO organization is very tight within the LIGO project, but it's also extremely well organized around the gravitational community. So there are people, there are groups all over the states that have MOUs with LIGO. There's complete cooperation between LIGO and GEO now. There are a whole host of MOUs between LIGO and GEO for open data exchange and scientific exchange. There's an intense organization of cooperation. I think that's been missing in our field, and I think if we are embarrassed to find that they can observe black holes before we can model them, at least in some sense, and that would be embarrassing, then I think the key thing that's lacking here, the reason that we haven't done it, is not the technical problems, it's because we haven't organized our field well enough. We haven't cooperated well enough and got people together. And this workshop is exactly that. I think that's the wonderful thing about this workshop, and the fact that everybody's wanted to come to it is exactly the feeling, the opportunity to get ourselves working together between different groups, across national boundaries, across subject boundaries, and so on, and make more progress than we've had in the past. I do want to sound a note of warning. It's my view, if the gravitational wave detectors do detect gravitational waves from coalescing black holes, and if this community hasn't modeled black holes, hasn't demonstrated they can model, let's say, a plunge with a reasonable amount of duration by that time, I think you'll find that there'll be all sorts of numerical astrophysicists coming in and trying to push you out of the way.
That would be great. We should apply that.
Okay.
We can get everybody who's working on this problem in the one corner.
That's right. That's right.
Not you, not me, not even Greg anymore.
That's right. That's why he's the chairman of this session. Kiss of death. But that's right. We don't have very many people, but we'd be overwhelmed, I think, and by having lots of astrophysicists coming in. If we do a good job, then we'll be. But it could be a very big change, and the kinds of discussions that we've seen here among people who know relativity and who are sensitive to fine points of relativity, a lot of that will be culturally totally opposite. Oh, yeah, that's right. Well, I think that's right. But I do think that if there's a perception that we haven't done the job, that we'll be in trouble. Yeah, but you've got a job, and a lot of these people don't. No, but I think it's very important for us.
Doesn't matter how many decades we take, the problem will still be there kind of attitude. Now, that's great because it's a wonderful moment of maturation of a field. And you're at that cusp. What's fine if a community is looking to you for is leadership and maturity. Can you handle being given as a field of client $500 million?
Well, we haven't been given $500 million.
But the perception from outside is that you're part of that field.
You can tell the difference between experimental and theoretical gravitation. You don't understand.
Well, I certainly can. I look at the grants and I see Caltech, LIGO, 1 million, and everybody else is $40,000. Other experimentalists is $300,000 a year. Students are still $40,000 or $50,000. We're not getting.
Your field is going through a permanent change in the next 2 years, whether you like it or not. And I've seen a lot of fields go through this. And the theorist, if you don't want to, you know, get organized and start cooperating and be serious about science and the way that fields do that have experimental data are hasn't for a long time, then you just won't be part of what the way that science is organized. And you've got it all in your hands. And it isn't math, just the people who are working on the computer. What we need is the people who, all you brilliant people who do the hyperbolic system analysis, the stability analysis, and the Cauchy analysis, and all of these things that form the theoretical framework within which we do the peers, we need you to come forward with some real cooperation across your competitive attitude juices, which of course it always does keep progress going. But there comes a time when not only do you compete, but you at the same time with the same people collaborate in a way you haven't done before. And ITP is partly pulling this group together here as opposed to some other group of clients that could have used this room for 3 weeks. Because it knows that this field is at a moment. Well, that was with David Gross for an hour last night, who's the director of this place. And he's very excited about the moment that we have. But you're going to have, you can't just continue with this institution. That's what Bourbon's trying to do.
Well, what kind of business then would you like to see us do? I mean, these phrases that you're...
Yeah. Well, I have covered up some suggestions. I'm not asking... Yeah, that's right. I'm not asking for another grand challenge. I mean, the grand challenge it produced some interesting science. It did not produce the kind of organization that people in the beginning of the grand challenge had hoped for. And I think we have to realize that the perception outside the field is whatever we think of what happened in the grand challenge, the perception outside the field is that it failed. And that this is a field which is not... the numerical side is a field that's not producing science of the quality that the experimental people working in parallel are producing. Now, whatever we think of what's going on, whatever we think the reasons, I believe that's a fair assessment of what the outside perception of this field is. And I think that's worrying, and I think we should all be worried by that, and I think we should all be trying to find other ways of cooperating that don't follow the grand challenge model, and I think this workshop is a very good place to start. So all I'm going to suggest, that's under the hidden on the paper, is a bunch of topics that I think are the important things, but other people will have other opinions. But I want to suggest that we identify and focus on things, and try to come out at the end of this workshop with not solutions, but ways forward, and working groups and people identified for cooperating with one another. In much the way that people in the experimental side have long been operating without formal global organizations. I do want to uncover this. So, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Okay. Well, that was the last thing I was going to say is that this is the things that I'm going to talk about now are just my own view, but I hope that on Friday, in Friday's discussion, we can have a much better attention to this, and people will think about these things, and then by Friday we can come back to them and talk about ways of cooperating. So here's my wish list of what are the really important issues. The first one, which seems to me is critical, is black hole excision, or if there are alternatives to black hole excision, and people have talked about alternatives to black hole excision, getting them to work. And I see that as related to coordinates. Now, there's going to be a discussion about coordinates independently of this thing, but I think when you're doing excision, the coordinate conditions are particularly critical. So I link these two things together. I think it's a critical issue. I think at the moment it's mainly the numericists. I have a hard time seeing where the more mathematical analysts can make a positive contribution until the numericists have some results to show them about things that are going wrong and so on, and more than we have now. But maybe I'm wrong about this. Maybe there are key ideas that come out of analysis. I don't know. A second important thing that struck me at this meeting is diagnostics and interpretation. The numerical people draw a graph, put a picture up, psi 4, or shape of the apparent horizon, and then analysts say, what does that mean? You know? Well, I think the right thing is for the analyst to be saying to the numericist, please show me a graph of the following thing. Right? I think the right thing is for people who really understand geometry to be putting their minds to not just asymptotic geometry, which we've spent decades getting right in relativity and understanding that it can be done in an invariant way, and we can understand the asymptotics. But now we're confronted with geometry inside, where things are coordinate dependent, and there's nothing that's totally invariant. But what is useful there? What would be helpful to see from a numerical integration where you have the whole metric of space-time? I don't think it's the numericist's job to just decide what to plot. I think the analyst should be coming back and saying, these are the things that would help us to understand what's going on in that geometry.
And I think the answer is simple for the ideas, in the sense, if you want to read off radiation in an independent way, you have to read off psi 4 and psi.
Yeah, but but I'm talking about the interior geometry. There's more to these space-times than the radiation produced. We have to understand if the space-time is actually behaving in what we think is a physically sensible way. We want to know what happens to the horizons when they merge. We want to know what's going on inside, not just at the boundaries. And I think it's time that the analyst came back to the numericist and said, show me this, show me that. That's the diagnostics, the interpretation. Well, they should. Because this is where the physics of our field really is. We've tied up the asymptotics, but the real interest in the physics is what's going on inside. Beverly. Yeah. You don't. I agree with that actually, but I think we're seeing at this meeting they are showing things, and then I felt there was some displeasure or some confusion about what they're showing, but I think that's right. But I think people should be thinking in a more positive, more proactive way, that is giving feedback to the numericists about what would be good. I think we need people to start thinking about the interior geometry and not just the things that we know invariantly. Anyway, so I put that high. I wouldn't put that as critical, but I think that's very important. Forms of the equations, we've had lots of discussions about different forms of the equations, whether they're well posed, whether the coordinate conditions are important, stability and so on. Very, very important issue, and it's really one in which we've already seen a lot of cooperation and interaction between numericists and analysts. Very important that that continues. I think that's something which I'm happy to see the way that's moving. The fourth thing is this cooperation issue, and that's what I would hope that we would talk about on Friday again, is how do we come out of this workshop with something? one suggestion is maybe a working paper, maybe to identify problems, whatever the list of problems is, and have groups of people who agree that by the end of the workshop they're going to produce a wish list or a work list or something like that, a working paper looking for it in a field, and who are the people who are going to cooperate with one another. We've had the suggestion of another meeting. We have to organize ourselves around that. And can we find methods of continued cooperation? And maybe that's what WIMO wants to talk about. But to my mind, that's a critical issue. Okay, so that's my propaganda.